So, ladies and gentlemen, I wonder if I could call the attention back together. If you want to find yourself a seat, that would be brilliant. And what would be fantastic would be if you opened up your Bibles or your phone, wherever it might be, and found that letter that Jesus wrote to Laodicea. So you can see it there in front of you. That would be absolutely brilliant. As I say, in the notebook version, it's on page 18. In the church's Bibles, it's something like page 1235, something like that. And it's Revelation chapter 3. For the first month of 2020, let me give you some steering for a minute. For the first month or so of 2020, we're going to pause in our series on Revelation. And across the whole church, we're going to pause and we're going to plead with Jesus that he would amplify his presence in our life very significantly. So what we're going to do over about 5 weeks coming into the new year is pause the teaching program in Revelation, and across all 9 congregations, all the different locations, all the different people, all the different programs, we're going to pause collectively as a church. We're going to plead, Jesus, make us white hot for you. Jesus, do not leave us wondering what you might have done if only we had trusted more and given more. Jesus, do not waste 2020 because there is anything about us which is lukewarm or slow or complacent or reluctant. For the first month of 2020, at least for the first month, we're going to pause and we're going to consciously quiet the noise of life and the noise of church, so we might amplify God and hear as clearly as we can from him. We're going to pray, we're going to fast, we're going to pull all-nighters, we're going to prayer walk the town for 8 hours, we're going to gather together in every single location, we're going to ask people to fast and fast and fast and make themselves hungry and hungry and hungry for God. We are calling it amplified, and it is across everything. And we are saying, Jesus, if we have got anything wrong, Jesus, if we are out of sync in any way, Jesus, if there is even 1 inch of our life which we are not rightly saying belongs to you, if we are not listening like we should be, we are so sorry, Jesus. And just amplify your presence and your reality in my family, in my mind, in this space, in my congregation, in our church. Jesus, we do not want to get to the end of 2020 with any doubt at all that we have not given everything that you asked of us in every possible way. The whole start of next year, across the entire church, we are pleading with Jesus, do not leave us wondering what you might have done if only, but set us on fire as true beacons of who Jesus is. As individuals, as a church, as congregations, whether it's local to Stafford, whether it's in Kiel or Nosal, whether it's the churches that might want to graft in with what God is doing here, whether it's through a national impact, but in my heart, Jesus, in here, would you burn so desperately bright? Another way of putting it, friends, is we're going to be saying to Jesus, save us from being Laodicean. Jesus, save us from being Laodicean. Because this city had it all, and the church just thought it did. This city that Jesus writes to had it all, but the church just thought it did. The city of Laodicea was famous in 4 different ways. It really was the place to live in ancient Rome. To the north of it were hot volcanic streams. To the south of it was ice-cold mountain lakes. And so it became a centre of medical expertise, the place to go for healing, because you could draw on either. It was the major intersect of both road arteries and river arteries between the Roman Empire and the rest of the world. And so it was this merchant base, incredibly wealthy as a commercial hub of transportation. It was on a volcanic ridge. And so ore deposits had been laid down, which created a huge mining industry, particularly around gold. And so it became a banking centre, the Fort Knox, the Bank of England of that region of the world. And its loam-rich volcanic soils meant it was a fantastic breadbasket for the region. No one went hungry in Laodicea. In fact, so much so, they not only grew crops, but they raised animals for clothes. And it became a fashion house. The city of Laodicea was full of bankers and doctors and designers and gentlemen farmers. The city of Laodicea had it all, but the church only thought it had.
The first thing Jesus says to the church is very stark, isn't it? He says in verse 15 and 16 that they have a vomit-inducing, tepid interest in Jesus. He doesn't hold back. Have a look at sentence 15, if you would, with me. Jesus says, "I know your works. You are neither cold nor hot. Would that you were either cold or hot. So, because you are lukewarm, neither hot nor cold, I will spit you out of my mouth." Literally, Jesus says, you make me want to be sick. I mean, that's incredible, isn't it? He looks at this church, which thinks it has it all, thinks it has it all together, thinks it's a spiritual version of the wealth and prosperity and status of the town it finds it in, and it's a vomit-inducing, tepid temperature. That they never go overboard. They're never too excited. They're never that intense. There's no shock of the ice cold, nor the yelp of the boiling hot about them. They don't burn ever with desire. They don't long for self-revival. They don't hunger for or go hard after Jesus. They keep him near, but never close. They pray, but they never plead. They're dutiful, but they're never desperate. In fact, they believe the lie, it's a lie when it comes to Jesus, of all things in moderation. Let me calm down a little bit, right? And just give this a context, right? In my family, it's an amazing, wonderful family. It's a brilliant family. Quite rightly, my dad would often say to me, especially as a teenager when I was even more ADHD than I am now, especially when I was a teenager, my dad would say to me, "Alex, all things in moderation." Have you heard that proverb? It's not a Bible proverb. But have you heard that? All things in moderation. "Alex, stop eating chocolate cake. All things in moderation." I used to go to the gym. I've just started again, if you noticed, right? And he'd say about it. "No, I heard that, Judith." Right? But my dad would constantly say to me, "Alex, all things in moderation." Now, that is a great proverb when it comes to dieting or comes to exercise or comes to drinking or comes to screen usage. It really is. All things in moderation. It is rubbish when it comes to Jesus. There's no moderation around Jesus. Was he moderately committed to us? Was he kind of slightly influenced by us? Was he slightly drawn to us? Did he have a vague interest in what we were up to? No, he hung on a cross and died for our sin. There was nothing moderate about it. It was intense and crazy and foolish. And he put the whole created universe at risk by allowing himself to die in our place. And he writes to this church and he says, "Oh my goodness, there's no yelp of the boiling hot about you. There's no gasp of the freezing cold about you. You're just lukewarm." When I was about 14 years old, much to my surprise, my brother bought me a drink. It never happened before. He said to me, "Alex, this is a nice lemonade. I've made you this nice lemonade. I've got it from the fridge. Had ice clinking in and everything." I was like, "Wow, my older brother has bought me a drink." Yeah? I took this massive, great gulp. Well, do you know what he'd done? Yes, he'd squeezed in some kind of fairy liquid thing into it. Right? I took this massive gulp. Like it came down, backfired on him because it came straight back out. And he was standing like a foot and a half away from him. He suffered worse than I did. He was in the splash zone. But that's what Jesus says here. You're like tepid. You're like lukewarm. I'm renowned in this building. Ask other members of the team. I'm renowned for leaving half-drunk cups of tea around. I'll have three or four on the go. Right now, I've lost three cups of tea this morning since I arrived 2 hours ago. Yeah? I leave half a cup of tea. It's guaranteed to be mine. But there's nothing worse, is there, than making a cup of tea, forgetting you made it, finding it again half an hour later, going, "Ooh, that looks nice," picking it up and taking a swig, and it's kind of gone tepid, is it? You're like, "Yes, yes, do you like cold tea?" No! Jesus says to them, "You're just tepid. You're just moderate." It's not that they're uninfluenced by Jesus, but they're just influenced by him. It's not that they're not near Jesus, they are, but he's not close. It's not that they don't pray, they do, but they never plead. In fact, the very thought of a month set aside to pray and fast, to imagine that we might not be in quite the right place with Jesus, and have the humility and teachability to say, "I'm not quite where Jesus wants me, and so I'm going to plead that he'd show me," This is a church that goes, that's a bit serious, isn't it? Keep it on Sunday morning. But don't let it cascade into Tuesday. Keep it polite, but don't rock the boat. And then the second thing he says to them is that you have self-inflicted blindness and poverty and nakedness on yourself. Not only are you vomit-inducing, the original language is literally, I vomit you out. It really is the word vomit. Yeah? Really is the word vomit. I took the dog for a walk this morning, about 6 o'clock. Say a few prayers, take the dog for a walk. We live close to town. There's a little pile. There it is. Someone last night, stumbling home, too much to drink, puked 100 yards from our front door. There's a little pile. There's always carrot in it, isn't there? Yeah? There it is. Yeah? Yeah? I'm walking along. Oh, man, I just put my foot in it. Wiping on the grass. Vomit. Jesus says that about this church. Because they're not hot. They're not cold. There's no yelp of the boiling hot. There's no gasp of the ice cold. They're just, in teenage speak, meh. Meh? Meh. But then secondly, verse 17, you know, he says, look, you self-inflicted blindness, nakedness, and poverty. Have a look at verse 17. For you say, I am rich, I have prospered, I need nothing. Not realizing that you're wretched, pitiful, poor, blind, and naked. Do you see their level of self-deceit? You know, they're saying, look, we live in this city, Laodicea, we've got it all together. We're rich, we're well off, we're respected, we're appreciated. We're an impacting community. We Christians are thought well of. We don't need anything. Do you see the horror of that phrase? I need nothing. That's what they're saying in verse 17. It makes Jesus weep when we say that. Weep. I've got it all together. I know my Bible inside out. I say my prayers. I'm all sorted. I'm clothed. I'm rich. I can see spiritually. I don't need nothing. It breaks Jesus' heart. When he hears that, when we hear that on our own lips, I need nothing, we should panic. We should be full of terror if we hear that cycle, if that's our internal monologue. I don't need anything spiritually, I'm sorted with Jesus. Oh my goodness. Oh my goodness. It means you need everything. Everything. He writes to this church, doesn't he, that has all the external trappings. This church has everything together. It has lots of different buildings, lots of different congregations, any number of paid staff, a fantastic volunteer workforce who are absolutely committed, a national footprint, and a minister who's been asked to be president. He looks at this church and he says, I could vomit you out. He looks at this church in Laodicea. I'm not talking about us. I wasn't talking about us. And looking at this church in Laodicea. And he says, do you burn hot? Or are you ice cold? Do you pray or do you plead? Are you dutiful or are you desperate? Is Jesus near or is he close? Where are you? Where are you? A month set aside in the new year to amplify the presence of God. To amplify the presence of God in our life like we have never experienced. To hear him at such volume, our spiritual ears bleed. As we silence and quiet the noise of world and church and struggles and stress and strain and illness. Not because any of these things are bad, but because they're not God. Now let's have a look at what Jesus says to his church. How Jesus responds. Friends, it's absolutely remarkable. Do you know what the first thing he says? Have a look at verse 19. The first thing Jesus says to this church, remember how he's described it. What's the first thing? Verse 7, sentence 19. Those whom I, what's the word? Love. The first thing he says to them is, I love you. You've neglected me. You've kept me in touch. You've shown disinterest. You're lukewarm. And I love you. I love you. Doesn't that blow your mind? He should be so angry. He should be so annoyed. He should move on to that more fruitful church. But he doesn't. He says, the very first thing he says is, I love you. When I was 17 and a half years old, I'd just passed my driving test, proud as punch. We had a big station wagon, 7-seater, Peugeot 505. Do you remember them? They don't make them anymore. The size of a hearse. It was enormous. We had big family.
And that's what I learned to drive in. It's why I can drive that I can drive the wagon we've got now with my eyes closed, because it's smaller in length than the car I learned to drive in. And the one rule my mum and dad gave to me as I passed my driving test, they said, Alex, for the first 2 months, while you get used to driving this big, powerful vehicle, 2.2 litre petrol engine, big, long vehicle, while you get used to driving it for the first 2 months, no one else in the car with you. But I was proud and confident and 17. And I was one of the first in my friendship group to pass my driving test. So Friday night, the car's loaded up with teenage boys and girls, especially girls. Yeah? And I'm driving my friends, 7, 8, 9 of us in the car. And I go around this roundabout a little bit too fast. And I bounce the curb on the other side of the roundabout. And I take the car down the ditch. Not dramatic. The car didn't flip. Probably in slow motion action replay, it all looked very calm. But I bump the curb and I'm down like this in the ditch. We're terrified in the car. Heart's pounding. Is everyone alive? Yeah? You know? In hindsight, it's like, boop, boop. But in the time, I'm like, whoa, I'm like Mission Impossible, James Bond, you know. And we all get out, and I lead this troop sort of crying, rain-drenched, dressed up to the nines, Friday night teenagers. I lead us, this clan of seven dwarves, yeah, to the Premier Inn that was on the roundabout. And they allow me to call home. No mobile phones back then. They allow me to call home. Dad? Yeah, oh, some of you are feeling my pain, aren't you? Yeah. All sorts of memories coming back. I'll pray for you later. Yeah. Dad, I've had a little accident with the car. Sorry, sir. I've had a little accident with the car. Dad's like, right, we're coming. Mum and Dad in the other car. My two little sisters fast asleep in bed, in their pyjamas, in the car. They probably broke so many more laws than I did getting to where we were, right? My dad walks into the Premier Inn, right? All my friends are cowering in the background. They're not so much my friends anymore. Yeah? There's them and me. Yeah? Yeah? My dad walks up to me, strides across the Premier Inn foyer, even the receptionist behind the counter. Yeah? My dad strides across. I've broken every rule. I potentially wrecked the car. I've done exactly what they said not to do. My dad strides across to me, puts his arms around me, and says, Alex, I love you. Now, so many more words followed that. Yeah? Words of discipline, words of punishment, words of reproof, words of sort it out. For 6 months I was paying back for the dents in the car. I had to ring every set of parents of kids who had been in my car that next morning and apologise. I had to send flowers to the mum. Lots of other words followed, but do you know what the first words were? I love you. I love you, says Jesus. That's why I discipline you. That's why I reprove you. That's why I say, come on, let's sort it out together. Because I love you. Do you see that? So if you're sitting here like I've been over the last couple of weeks, deeply penetrated by God's letter, Jesus writing to the Laodiceans, feeling like he's writing to me, not because I'm in a bad place, but I realise I'm not in God's place, right? Needing as much as anybody a month of amplified. If you're like me, you need to hear, as Jesus goes from your lukewarm, as Jesus goes from you're naked, but you think you're clothed, you need to hear the very first response he says is, I love you. I love you. The second of the three things Jesus says is, I knock. Have a look at verse 20, would you? Verse 20. Behold, I stand at the door and knock. If anyone hears my voice and opens the door, I will come into him and eat with him, and he with me. Do you see what's remarkable about this? Who's done all the work to get to this situation? Jesus taps at the door of the house of our life and he knocks. What are we doing? What are we doing? We're just sitting in the house. What's Jesus done? Jesus has left heaven and come to earth, and he's been a baby, and he's been an illegal immigrant as an evil King Herod tried to slaughter him. He's broken his back and thickened his arms being a carpenter. He's bled, he's sweated blood as he prayed that God wouldn't take him to the cross. He's hung on the cross, he's faced death, shame, sin, Satan, all of it. He's risen again, he's ruling in heaven. Who's done the work? Jesus has. We're sitting at home watching TV. And he's got to our front door. And he knocks. And all we have to do is what? Welcome him in.
Do you remember the first half of this year I was on crutches? Do you remember the crutches? Yeah. Do you remember me foolishly trying to pretend I didn't need crutches, preaching like this? Yeah. Do you remember all of that stupidity? Yes. No? I do. Yes. So I couldn't, loads of days, I couldn't get to work. I had the little motorised scooter thing, the rocket trolley, Mel called it. Do you remember the rocket trolley? Yeah. And I'd trundle around on the rocket trolley. I got stuck on the Isabel Trail. I told you that story, some of you, didn't I? I had to walk on my crutches a mile and a half, having abandoned the rocket trolley under a bridge, yeah? To find civilization again. I was like this great conquering Indiana Jones with one leg, yeah? But I had to have loads of meetings at home, yeah? I'd sit at home, and loads of you really kindly would come to our house. Who did the work? You. You got in your car. You drove. You found the extra time in your diary to do that journey. You paid for the petrol. And you stood at my front door and you knocked. What did I have to do? Just welcome you in. Just welcome you in. He's not waiting for them to be clothed. I did clothe myself. He's not waiting for them to be clothed. He's not waiting for them to be wealthy. He's not waiting for them to step towards him. He did all the work. That is the heart of the message of Christmas, isn't it? Is Jesus has done everything required. Whatever state you find yourself in right now, whether you feel like the Laodiceans or not, the Christmas message is Jesus has done everything to get to your front door and knock, and all you have to do is welcome him in. All you have to do is welcome him in. Look at verse 18, look what he says. I counsel you to buy from me gold refined by fire so you may be rich, and white garments so you may clothe yourself, and the shame of your nakedness may not be seen, and salve to anoint your eyes, so you may see again. Do you see what he says? He says, buy from me. Buy from me these things that you desperately need. I've got them, buy them from me. But here's my question. If you are poor and have no money, how can you buy it? You can't, can you? And if you are naked, you can't leave the house to go to work. Can you imagine turning up at a job interview in your birthday suit? Yes? Yes, I have qualifications for this role.
Oh, really? Really?
It's flipping burgers.
Yes, I can do that. Yes.
Yeah. You can't, can you? You can't even sing because you're blind.
See, the image here is that Jesus is the best ever door-to-door salesman you're ever going to meet. Because you need gold, but you're too poor to buy it. And you need clothes, but you're naked, so can't possibly go to M&S and buy some. And you need to be able to see, but you're blind. And to make it even worse, you don't even know that about yourself. But Jesus does. So he comes to your house with exactly the things you need, even before you know you need them. And he stands at the door as the best ever door-to-door salesman and knocks. Now, can you imagine it? You open the door. You don't know you're naked. It's like the Emperor's New Clothes. It's like a really disturbing version of the Emperor's New Clothes. You open the door. You're naked. Happened to me once in university. I was clothed. I knocked on a friend's door. That hockey player in our hall, I forget his name. Rob. Rob used to play hockey, chairman of the hockey team. I think he'd had a few too many the night before. He lived across from me. I knocked on his door and he just opened the door. He'd start naked. Just chatting away. I'm like, just look, just there. Just okay? Yeah? But imagine, there's a knock 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 on the door. You open the door. You're naked, you're poor, you're blind, you don't even realise it. It's Jesus, the best ever door-to-door salesman. He walks in. He says to you, do you know you're naked? Oh, my goodness. Do you know you're blind? Oh, I didn't realise, I couldn't see. Do you know you're poor? And you look around for the first time and realise the wretchedness of your life. And you say, I want clothes. I want gold. I want to be able to see, but I can't afford it. I can't go to work. I can't. Do you know what Jesus does? He says, well, I'll just give you the gold at my expense. You can't afford to pay me for it, so I'll just give you my gold. I'll give you my wealth. And then to your shock, Jesus starts to take his clothes off. He died naked on the cross. He takes his clothes off and says, wear my royal clothes, because you can't afford your own. So wear mine. And then to your absolute shock, he gouges out his own eyes. And says, you can't see. You can't possibly afford the medical intervention to correct this. So have my eyes, and I'll be blind. So you can see. and I'll be naked, so you can be clothed, and I'll be poor, so you can be rich. That is the heart of the crucifixion. Jesus becomes naked so we can be clothed. Jesus becomes dirt poor criminal buried in a pauper's grave so we can be rich. Jesus loses his sight as his eyes close as a corpse so we can see. It's remarkable, isn't it? We cannot afford it, so he pays the price. We cannot afford it, so he pays the price. And then the third and final thing he says to this church. First, he says, I love you. Second, he says, I mock. And third, he says, I grant. I grant. Have a look at sentence 21, would you? It says this: the one who conquers, I will grant him to sit with me on my throne, as I also conquered and sat down with my Father on his throne. You see the little phrase, I will grant. Do you see the picture that Jesus says here? He says, I love you, I will knock and bring to you everything you need, and so now I can grant you. Because now you're clothed in his royal clothes, and you have his eyes, so the retina scan of heaven's throne room recognizes you. And you have the wealth of a king, so he says, now I can grant you. Because you have literally become me. We don't steal his identity, but he gives us his identity. His eyes, it's like a fingerprint. His clothes that set him aside as the royal one. His wealth that is unique, all given to us at his cost. So he says, now I can grant you what? Have a look at verse 21. Look closely. I will grant him, her, us, to sit with me on my throne, as I also conquered and sat with my Father on his throne. There's three thrones here, isn't there? There's the Father's throne. There's Jesus' throne. And then there's our throne. Between the Father and the Son is Alex. Is Alex. Or as my boys, when I read it to them a couple of days ago, their interpretation of this, which I think is actually closer, but doesn't work as well with adults, and works brilliantly with kids, is Jesus says, I'm going to grant you to sit on my throne, the same way the Father granted me to sit on his throne. So there's the God the Father, and sitting on God the Father's lap is Jesus, yeah? Because Jesus says, I've been granted to sit on my Father's throne. So he's perched on the Father's knee as they're chatting away. And then who's on Jesus' knee? Us! Us. Now, it's a beautiful image when you're 5 years old. It doesn't work as well when you're 65. Maybe. You just think, I couldn't get up there, right? But, yeah. Yeah. The point is, he grants us a place in the throne room. Not a Karen behind the scenes. Not on the edge in the shadows. Not in the entourage. Not as a footman. Not as a palace guard. Not as the janitor that comes in unseen after the lights are off. But right in the middle of the thrones. I grant you that place. Not because of anything you've done or I've done. We were lukewarm, naked, poor, blind. But because Jesus came to us, knocked on the door, found us naked, found us poor, found us blind, stripped himself naked so we could wear his royal clothes, took all of his wealth and gave it to us and made himself poor, gouged out his eyes and became blind as a corpse so we could see. And so this morning, unashamedly, wholeheartedly and fully, I want to ask that you would join me in praying for Amplified. Praying now for what we will pray and be and fast and do in that first month of the new year. To save us from being layered sins. To pray that we would not organise a schedule but be driven by a desire. That we would not be satisfied with activities but seek a new heart. That we would not be glad of a full diary but hungry for a full soul. That we wouldn't present a front but be filled with a passion. That we wouldn't hear ourselves but we would hear Jesus. That we would no longer be poor and naked and blind without even realising it. But we would become clothed in his righteous robes. We would see with his eyes what we've never seen before. That we would have the spiritual wealth of one of God's own sons as identified with us. That we would not be tepid or lukewarm, but there would be the yelp of boiling hot about us. There would be the gasp of the freezing cold about us, and we would not be vomited out of Jesus' mouth. and cause someone to slip as they walk the dog. Yeah? Would you join me in that? Would you join me in that? Just for a minute, if you feel able, just for a minute, would you articulate what God has said to you to someone nearby? Oh, that's a big ask, isn't it? That's a big ask. Because if what God has said to me is anything like what he said to you, I find it hard to give it words. But would you for a minute turn to someone near you and say, this is what God is saying? And then you'll hear Dee hit a note in about 15 seconds time, and we're going to stand, we're going to sing this truth into our hearts. So Dee and Kate and Jeff, come on. The faster you move, the less awkward they'll feel. But while they're moving, what has God been saying to you? Go. What has he been saying to you through this letter to the Laodiceans?